It's dawn on India's southwestern coast, and I'm watching longboats glide in rosy gray light. It's a timeless scene at this former crossroads where traders, travelers, and imperialists, the Chinese and Japanese, the Dutch, the Portuguese, and of course the British, they all came to Cochin, which is now called Kochi. You can take a ferry from the main town to old Fort Kochi to see the old colonial buildings, the spice warehouses, where traders still offer cardamom and cloves, cinnamon and ginger. But you won't get too far from the ferry dock without encountering friendly but persistent motorized rickshaw drivers who really want to take you around for the day.
Yeah, this way go two directions, Fort Kochi.
Yeah.
In Jutao.
Okay.
I will make a little sightsee for 100 rupees.
Yeah. I just want to walk for a while. Maybe later I'll do sightseeing, but right now I just want to see it myself. Okay? Thank you.
You know how this is going to end, right? What can I say? On a hot day, it's actually kind of nice to have the wind in your hair. And it does let you see more of Kochi's historical sites, like a Portuguese-built church where the explorer Vasco da Gama was once buried before being moved home to Portugal. But this is not a place mired in its many layers of history. Kochi and the greater state of Kerala may look like they're from another era, but they're looking to the future, with dreams of becoming a high-tech manufacturing hub in the era of the Internet of Things. This also happens to be a part of India's own national ambition to turbocharge its once anemic manufacturing sector, anemic at least compared to China's, but then whose isn't? There's now a Make in India campaign, and India is fast moving up the ranks of global manufacturers. In this effort, Kerala has much to offer. It already has the highest literacy rate in India, an impressive e-literacy rate, like smartphones and computers, and aspirations to have India's highest F-literacy rate, that's F for fabrication, as in fabrication laboratories or fab labs, and the idea that as many people as possible become comfortable with making what they use and using what they make. In fact, Kerala just last year became the first state or region in the world to sign on to the Fab City movement. What does that mean, and how is it happening? Keep listening. This is Whose Century Is It? A podcast about ideas, trends, and twists shaping the 21st century. I'm Mary Kay Magstead. And this is the second of two episodes I'm doing on how making, manufacturing, and physical creation remain an important part of this century, but with new twists. Last time, I talked about the maker movement, which started more than a decade ago as an encouragement for Americans initially to get back in touch with the creativity and satisfaction that come with making something with your own hands. The maker movement has now spread to dozens of countries around the world. Indeed, I was at a maker fair last year in Shenzhen in southern China when I first heard MIT professor Neil Gershenfeld talk about his Fab Lab and Fab City initiatives.
I want to start by talking about the technology behind the maker movement and fab labs, and about how almost all of it is going to be obsolete, and the goal is to make it obsolete. There's a lot of short-term attention about things that are really going to disappear.
Like, Neil Gershenfeld thinks 3D printers get too much hype, when they're really just one of many tools that are a means to an end. Digital fabrication, especially on a personal scale.
A lab like mine has the 20 modern descendants of the milling machine. And there are about 20 computer-controlled processes. You can cut, burn, bend, fuse, mold, inject, deform. Now look at the process on the right. A child playing with Lego bricks. You don't need a ruler to assemble Lego. The geometry comes from the parts. When you assemble Lego, you can detect and correct errors, so the tower is more accurate than the child. You can join Lego bricks made out of dissimilar materials. And most importantly, when you're done, you don't put Lego in the trash. You take it apart and use it again.
And just like that, he says, other physical materials can be assembled from building blocks, a little like Legos. In fact, at Neil Gershenfeld Center for Bits and Atoms at MIT, they've come up with what he calls carbon fiber Lego, which is now being used to make lighter and stronger jumbo jets.
I ran a meeting with the White House because I got so annoyed at all the government agencies that wanted to talk to me about 3D printers. And we got together the experts in this emerging digitization of fabrication, meaning not information in designs, but in the materials. And what came out of it is this roadmap, going from computers controlling machines, then Fab Lab 2.0 is machines making machines, then coding and then programming materials.
Making component parts and putting them together in different ways for different purposes. This can be done at the personal level, custom making what you can't find elsewhere, and at the city or regional or even national level for a more sustainable ecosystem without so much waste. If computers were the first digital revolution and the internet was the second, Neil Gershenfeld believes digital fabrication is the third.
We're living through a moment like the birth of the internet, but now it's personalization of fabrication.
I was intrigued, so I went to visit Neil Gershenfeld at MIT. This is the Center for Bits and Atoms, or CBA, where the first Fab Lab was born early in this century. We're walking through rooms of big, expensive, high-tech machines that make things. Neil explains that these million-dollar machines are part of that roadmap to a future of digital fabrication, a network of machines of various costs and levels of precision and sophistication, ranging from, say, $1 million here to $10,000 for a machine in a typical Fab Lab, to eventually maybe just $1,000 for a fabricator that will sit on your desk.
And those don't replace each other, they nest. In the same way that there's a continuum from your smartphone to Google or Amazon's data center, all of this started as doing outreach from the expensive version, but all of those are evolving in parallel.
This is all related to the core mission of the Center for Bits and Atoms, or CBA.
CBA emerged as a program to look at how data becomes things and things become data. So in one direction, it's the real future of fabrication, which has a very long history, but we're learning how to actually put codes into the construction of materials, analogous to how computing and communication became digital. And in the opposite direction, it's research on how physical objects become information into computers, how you extract descriptions of things and turn them into digital objects. You could add all of that up to think of a real internet of things, where things can go into the internet and come back out.
So how does the maker movement tie into what you're doing here?
There's a long history. I was the first interview in Make magazine when it was starting, and we were just starting Fab Labs maybe 10 years ago. So hackerspaces and maker movement and all of that are part of this story. But to understand how these scales relate, the research we're doing at CBA related to Fab Labs is how you make the Star Trek replicator. And it really is a project in turning codes into materials, how to program from atoms on up. And that's maybe a 20-year research roadmap. And in the same way computing progressed from mainframes to mini computers to hobbyist computers to PCs, but the internet was invented long before the iPhone. In the same sense, long before we're done making the Star Trek replicator, you can explore what happens if you get access to all of this. And so within the broader maker movement, which I love, but also over-focuses on a lot of short-term technology without very good mentoring, generalizing, the Fab Lab network really accidentally grew into this coordinated global network approaching 1,000 sites that in a coordinated way follows the emerging technological best practice as we go down this research roadmap. And so on top of that platform, we've then built infrastructure for education, for business, for urban infrastructure, things like that. And so it's a kind of a network coordinated globe-spanning part of the maker movement.
If the maker movement is about unstructured play and creativity and having fun, the Fab Lab, Fab Academy, Fab Cities, Fab Foundation initiatives are much more structured and purposive. And then, out of the Fab Lab network, came the idea of Fab Cities, starting in Barcelona.
Barcelona has a fabulous design sense and 50% youth unemployment. A whole generation can't leave home and work.
So the Barcelona city architect and planner and the mayor started a project to put Fab Labs in all the districts of the city.
The idea is instead of hard-earned money from limited jobs being spent on products coming in at the harbor and then trash trucks going out to a dump, in the same way the city produces electricity or clean water, The idea is for the city to produce what it consumes locally. Now, it's not protectionism. The data comes and goes freely, but the atoms stay. The bits come and go and the atoms stay.
If you push it all the way, it's effectively saying, you know, this tradition we've had as a human race over centuries and millennia of trading with each other? That's not necessary. Let's trade ideas, sure, but stuff? No need. Interesting. Let's see how that goes. So far, there are around 16 fab cities and regions, including Boston and Bhutan, Sacramento and Santiago, Cairo and Kerala in India. They're all at early stages in approaching the goal of having an atoms-to-bits, bits-to-atoms ecosystem, that is, of being able to break down what's used into component parts and reassemble them into furniture, buildings, clothes, machines, electronics, cars, you name it. But Barcelona aims to become completely self-sufficient in physical material within 40 years, moving in that direction at a rate of 1% a year. Other places are approaching the Fab Lab concept at their own pace and in their own way. What does that mean in Kerala? I was curious. So I caught a cab and traveled a few miles outside of Kochi into a leafy rural area with a big construction site that's slowly becoming the Kochi Startup Village.
So I'm watching as one of the startup buildings goes up and the guys are up on the roof putting up the new pillars to lead to a new floor. And one of them is sort of leaning out precipitously into open air. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 stories up. And not the world's safest job. But this is part of what's supposed to lead to a new fab city center in Kochi, in Kerala.
Coming soon in this cluster will be incubation centers for biotech, electronics, and mobility and telecom.
So there are signs as you go up the stairs in this one building. They're big square photos. So one is of Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google, Kevin Systrom, Instagram, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook. And going into the Fab Lab doors, there's a sign on the wall, again, a white wall, that says, "We dream of a day when the sun sets at dusk in the valley. It would rise to see the dawn of a Silicon Coast in India."
I'm struck, here as in China, by how much reverence there is toward these Silicon Valley guys. There's a hunger here and in China to create companies and ideas and products that have the same kind of impact. Here in Kerala, there's this startup village and the Fab Lab in it. There's another Fab Lab in the state capital, Trivandrum. Actually, both were set up by Neil Gershenfeld himself. There are also plans to put 20 mini Fab Labs in engineering colleges around the state. So I'm here to meet a technical officer with the state government's initiative, Startup Kerala. His name is Varun Geetamoni. He's a former electronics communications engineering student turned startup entrepreneur and now turned technical officer at Startup Kerala.
Okay. So I've read through your website and it's been very interesting.
Oh, you like it?
Yeah.
Good.
Just for the first time I've been listening to something like this, so. Podcast.
First time you were listening to a podcast. Yeah.
He brings me into the Fab Lab, a big room with a complement of big tools, a laser cutter, a CNC router, 3D printers, and more, and neatly labeled bins full of smaller component parts. It's basically free for people to come in here and use this. It's quiet on this particular morning. There was a class here the night before with students staying into the wee hours. Varun tells me anyone can come in here by posting a request online, and many do.
Most of them are coming here to make prototypes.
So these would be people who have startups or...
Maybe startups as well as from school kids. We call them as makers, as you might be knowing.
Yeah.
So there are school children, college students, aspiring entrepreneurs, startups, even quite older guys who wants to try out some machining.
From your perspective, what's the difference between the maker movement and Fab Labs?
Fab Labs concept is to solve problems which are identified locally. You know, there is no point in doing a research where normal people's problems are not solved. So that, based on that only, we proposed few projects under this Fab City Challenge.
One is to spread the word and the skills. That involves training trainers who train teachers who train students in digital fabrication skills. Already, the project has given more than 10,000 grade school and high school students Raspberry Pis. That's not dessert, though it does sound tasty. These are credit card-sized $35 computers that can be programmed to make smart Internet of Things type objects and more. And the students here have come up with pretty creative uses for them. One programmed a Raspberry Pi to keep track of what government officials were showing up for work. Another project Kerala has embraced is trying to move toward Fab 2.0, having a fab lab whose machines can create machines for yet another fab lab. They're still a long way from being able to do that. A third project is creating a community-owned Wi-Fi mesh, or as they call it, cow mesh. Cute, huh? So even people who don't have internet can get information about their community and share ideas and post complaints in Wi-Fi chat rooms. Varun says the hope is that all this will help inspire more innovation in Kerala through hands-on learning and experimentation, especially among engineering students. And as a former engineering student, he says he knows of what he speaks.
Most of them don't actually innovate anything. And the problem is that even though they are having an innovative idea, there is no support mechanism for it. Even the teachers don't know about the new machines that are coming up. Even they know, but they don't have anything to show them. They are not accessible to it. So once we are out of engineering, we know only about the theories, nothing in practical. So this Fab Lab can be a supportive mechanism for them to do the projects.
The Kerala Startup Mission is working with 128 colleges across Kerala so they can get access to Fab Labs and learn their way around the machines. Some come for another reason, too, to take Neil Gershenfeld's MIT class, How to Make Almost Anything. They take it connected via internet, both with MIT and with other Fab Labs around the world. That's the class that students were in here taking last night. Varun says being part of that network was one of the big draws for Kerala to join the Fab Lab movement.
And the faculty or the trainers they are having is very brilliant, and they support us 24/7. Anytime we go online, they are always available for support.
So what kind of support would you seek from them?
Any technical issues, some problem with soldering or designing, we can connect to anyone. Some trainer might be in Spain, other might be in Australia or in US, so they are always ready to help. See, not here, in most of the labs, there is always a camera which is on air. It's live. So anybody can see what's happening in the other lab. That's how the network has been built.
Kerala's leaders want to build up a generation of tech-savvy, e-literate, F-literate citizens who can help Kerala become a go-to place for the Internet of Things and draw back talented locals who have gone abroad, like to Silicon Valley, all while bringing Kerala's own education system into the 21st century. But Varun is candid about the challenges in getting there. He says Kerala has had at least one false start before.
There were good projects coming up in the 90s, but they didn't grow along with the technology. So they were good in making that picture-tube TVs, but it doesn't evolve to the LED or the LCD. Why is that? There is a gap in that.
Why do you think it is?
See, they are not getting exposed to new technologies. The government has to support, and they should also be given exposure to the upcoming technologies, right?
Do you think there's resistance to emerging technologies?
Even if we take our education system, the most of the engineering syllabus is still old. We still study the microcontroller. Why don't they study about Raspberry Pi? Why? The system has to get updated. That's what lacks here.
That's part of what joining the Fab City Initiative is meant to do. Connect Kerala to a global network of people who are sharing ideas on how to mesh digital fabrication, urban design and development, citizen participation, ecological awareness, conservation, and recycling. It also, of course, gives a boost to the local economy by nurturing startups from the incubation stage on up. Actually, there's even a program for pre-incubation.
Pre-incubation means if a person or a group of guys comes up with an idea, and if an idea is found viable, we'll start giving them incubation support. They need not be a registered company. So what we do is we'll crystallize their idea, and they'll have to come up with the idea within a period of 6 months. Within that, if they succeed, they will be moved into the incubation. And if not, we'll ask them to come up with a better idea. See, the problem that we are facing is these students have a feeling like that if I start a company, then that's it. I don't need to study further, or being dropout is considered as an added value or something. That's how
they get this from Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg. And
but see, there are reasons for why did Larry Page and Sergey Brin dropped out. So everybody considers them as role model, and we have been seeing that there is a trend for these guys to not to pursue their academics and rather than come and start a company. So to avoid that, we strongly recommend them to go through pre-incubation. Otherwise, the problem is like they will sit with this idea for a period of 2 or 3 years, and the valuable time at the very young age is being lost.
So you're encouraging them, give it 6 months, if it doesn't work, go back to school, get your education.
It's being done as part of their curriculum itself. The dropping out from colleges, we don't encourage that.
Okay. So big picture, 20 years from now, what impact do you hope that being part of the Fab Cities movement will have had on Kerala?
All these Fab Labs will be evolving with new machines, where new machines come up, and we'll be able to make Kerala one of the maker destinations in India, as well as we'll be able to contribute more to the digital fabrication sector. It adds value, it's value to the economy, as well as all the other sectors. Like, it definitely would help startups for sure. As you might be aware, we are 100% on having digital literacy in the nation.
So you are the number one state in terms of digital literacy. Yes. What does digital literacy mean in this case?
Literacy means doing the day-to-day activities in the digital platform. Here, 95 out of 100 people knows how to use a mobile phone.
Does your grandmother know how to use a mobile phone? She does.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yes. My grandma, she calls my father every day. Uh-huh. Yeah. She know how to message, how to look the balance in the phone. Everything is known to her.
So how did you get 100% e-literacy? I mean, were people brought in for training, or did people just...
Just how people get used to all these things. See, nobody trained them on smartphones, how to use smartphone or how to use mobile phone.
Yeah.
People came to know that exists something and they tried it out. Mm-hmm. See, unless they are given an opportunity to try it out, people won't do it.
Kerala now wants to have F literacy, fabrication literacy. Okay, let me ask you, what does F literacy mean to you? What should someone know how to do if they're going to be F literate?
So it's like everything that I own or I have or I want has to be made by myself. If it is a furniture, I should be able to make it. I don't simply go and buy it from outside.
Isn't that kind of ambitious? I mean, I couldn't make everything that I use.
And at least I can try it out, right? There should be something in every home which is made. If I need a table, if I can go to a Fab Lab and get it done by myself, that's good, right?
Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate. What if I'm very busy? In fact, I work 60, 70 hours a week. I don't want to make my own furniture. I want to be able to go in the 10 minutes I have free and buy my furniture. What's wrong with that?
There is nothing wrong with that. But there is difference between buying something and doing something, right? On your own.
Sure. But why is it important for everyone to know how to make everything that they use? As opposed to it just being available if they want to know how to do it.
I will be able to customize things, right? If I can have a design of my own and I can see it on my, as per my thoughts, that adds value, right?
But we're talking about having that as an option, right? I mean, so you're never going to have 100% F literacy.
Yeah. Very, as you said, it's a very ambitious dream.
And it's gotten me thinking about all kinds of things. Like, if people had to make everything they use, there'd be a lot less stuff. Perhaps also less well-made stuff, but maybe I'm being too skeptical, or maybe I'm just projecting because I'm thinking about my own level of skill and how much time I'm willing to spend making my own stuff. I'm guessing that even if digital fabrication does become the next revolution, there will continue to be specialization. People who are good at design and at making will do more of it, and will be able to make to order. And people who aren't good at design and don't have the patience or interest to make all or even most of the stuff they use can shop it out, so to speak, and have time to do what they're good at or what they love. Meanwhile, regular old shopping and mass manufacturing will probably continue to exist for a long while to come, but with new choices, perhaps also with new awareness of how to ramp up recycling in your day-to-day life. So keep an eye on fab labs and fab cities, and on how they evolve as this century moves forward. They may stay contained among enthusiasts, even if it's a large group of enthusiasts, dozens of cities and millions of people. Or they could indeed become the third digital revolution, one that will transform your life, whether you're paying attention or not. Of course, if you ask Neil Gershenfeld, there's no question. The revolution has already begun. For more on Fab Labs, Fab Cities, and the print version of this story, go to our webpage, pri.org/century, where you can also listen to any or all of our 25 previous episodes. You can also find them on iTunes and most other podcast apps. And if you're not already subscribing, please do. If you like the podcast, please rate us. It helps. Comments, questions, suggestions? I'd love to hear them. Send me a note on Twitter. I'm at Mary Kay Magstad. That's MaryKayMagistad. All one word. Whose Century Is It? Is a co-production between me and PRI's The World in cooperation with the BBC World Service and WGBH in Boston. It's funded by a grant from the Henry Luce Foundation. Thanks for listening. Join us next time.